persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Paul Revere's lantern lighter is lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. The 10th GOP debate. Did it mark the beginning of the toppling of Trump? The aftermath of Scalia's passing, how hard will the president-alleged push for a progressive-dominated court? New York wants to give voting rights to illegals. Bolshevik Bernie's sisters and brothers are capitalizing on 50 years of godless communist indoctrination in our public education system, and Hillary's aides are going to be subpoenaed and compelled to testify, so ordered by a Clinton-appointed justice who said, "We wouldn't be in this fix with this email scandal if an appointed official had followed the rules," referring to Hillary. I guess we will see. Folks, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
You know, looking at all of this in front of me, I'm sure we won't get past just an examination of Thursday's debate. Did Thursday's GOP debate in Houston signal the toppling of the Trumpster? Ted and Rubio took it to him and had him sweating. Kasich and Carson were totally ho-hum. Kasich did a bit better, I think, this time. But, you know, his time to speak was restroom or kitchen break time, right? You with me on that, right? And Carson, I'm sorry, I love Carson, but he simply has nothing new to say. It's become so repetitive. His time was nap time, all right? So Kasich time was break time, and Carson time was nap. They're done. I don't see any need to offer commentary on their remarks in the debate. And besides, I don't believe I find anything particularly instructive to be gained from it. Typically, your favorite candidate wins the debate, right? Cruz supporters will say Cruz won, Trump supporters will say Trump won, and Rubio supporters are going to say Rubio won. So, and there are exceptions to this, by the way. Rubio's followers could not help but notice he totally fumbled the ball in New Hampshire, and Carson supporters are beginning to concede Carson's a very nice man, but not the fighter we need right now. In this debate, most agree that Rubio and Ted took it to Trump and had Trump sweating and stammering even more incoherently than is usual for Trump. So, a few observations. Cruz, who is my pick for president, I've not made any secret about that, seems to have been shaken a bit by his slip in the New Hampshire and South Carolina primaries. Certainly, he hasn't stumbled, but to me, he seems, I should say, perhaps seemed, for a while there, to be a bit stilted. His rhetoric had become somewhat monotone. And what does that mean? How do I explain it? As a public speaker for many, many years, I know exactly what I mean. But how do you explain this? I guess I would say, there needs to be some relief moments in his speeches, some place where he relaxes and includes some humor, some compassion, perhaps, with his passion. And I believe he has that. You know, in his palette of rhetorical colors that he uses to paint his vision for America on the canvas of our hearts, he needs to include some humor. Not a joke, that's not what I mean at all. But there needs to be some good humor here. Lately, it's pretty much been all dark colors of doom. And to be honest, that's going to be the dominant colors for any honest rhetorical painting of America today. But we need to hear more about what America is going to look like when he has implemented his plan. And hopefully it would be something more substantial than Trump's constant, you know, it's going to be great, it's going to be different, and that's for sure. Are you tired of that? These glittering generalities? This is not to say there has been no positive vision cast from the Cruz campaign, au contraire. But we need a little more, I have a dream, in his message, I think. People are driven by doom and gloom, but not inspired by it. If you watched the debate, you probably noticed that while both Rubio and Cruz attacked Trump effectively, you likely enjoyed Rubio's smiling banter more than Cruz's piercing jabs. Personally, I would like to see Cruz have a little more fun on the campaign trail, not at the expense of him being anything other than who he really is. And if, in fact, he's all seriousness and has not of the jovial in his nature, well, that would be a mistake to put it on. But if it's there, by all means, bring it on. Now, he certainly came through in this last debate, and some are trying to count him out here. That's ridiculous. You know, I think sometimes these characters forget that the people who watch these things, at least most of them, don't wait for the pundits to tell them what they saw. Cruz made his presence felt, his intellect was scintillating as usual, and he was the more substantial of all of them on that stage Thursday night. And, you know, really, I was on the edge of my seat when he pressed Trump to admit he wants to replace Obamacare with Trump Care, you know, a national health care government-paid program. All right, let's look at what I saw as evidence that our team is learning how to deal with the Donald. On the issue of immigration, here's what came out. As you know by now, Trump's plan is to deport the 11 million illegals who are here now, that's the estimate, could be as many as 15 million, and then process the good ones back in and give them a path to citizenship is what he's actually angling for. Furthermore, as you know, Cruz objects to this, saying those who have broken our laws to enter our country illegally ought not to be given any special preferential path of reentry and should have forfeited any privilege of citizenship indefinitely. And by the way, that is current law, okay? So that's all Cruz is saying. We're going to enforce the laws that are on the books right now. Cruz's concern goes beyond the simple fact that we have lawbreakers here. He's also concerned about the impact this influx of immigration has had and continues to have on jobs and the social support infrastructure of this country. You know, so for him, my point is it's a bigger issue than simply build a wall, deport the illegals. His plan is more comprehensive. It includes a serious and honest look at what amount of immigration we can sustain. Now, you would think every member of the Tea Party and every other conservative out there, especially guys like law enforcer-in-chief Arizona Sheriff Arpaio, would agree with Cruz on this. But I guess Arpaio is soft on the edges of this issue after all and has thrown his support behind Trump. Or maybe he hasn't thought it through. And that's, I think, the case for so many. Trump's support continues to grow, it seems, in spite of all this, and it's enough to make you suspicious that his support is coming from people who are emotionally jazzed up about a wall that just got higher, let me tell you, right? Instead of people who are examining his policies and really looking at them. You know, that together with a lot of Dems who are crossing over to vote for the Donald in the GOP open primaries, which is a problem here. And this election especially, something I'll address in another show. So let's look at this issue that came up in the debate to close out the first segment, dealing with the Donald. After Cruz offered the example of Arizona's experience with illegal immigration and how well it worked out for them, how does Trump respond? Well, simple. He boasts that Arizona Sheriff Arpaio supports him. So enough said. That's it. That's his response. Rubio basically admitted Cruz is correct about his position on immigration, but offers some clarification on his position. He wants to stop the flow of illegals into the country and then address the illegals that are here at present, saying, quote, we'll see what the American people are willing to support, end quote. So he's a little soft on any plan on what he's going to do about the illegals that are here. Then Rubio turned his guns on Trump, and I got to tell you, he did a great job. He accused Trump of hiring a significant number of people from other countries to take jobs Americans could have filled. Well, Trump responds to this by attempting to explain how he rationalized breaking the law and hiring illegals. I mean, he goes on and on. He talks about it being, well, seasonal work, you know, 90-day jobs, 120-day jobs, and no one was available to work in those, quote, hot sections of Florida, end quote. So another, he rationalizes breaking immigration law. Then Rubio hit him square on the glass jaw, quote, I think that if you're going to claim that you're the only one that lifted this into the campaign, that you acknowledge that, for example, you're the only person on this stage that has ever been fined for hiring people to work on your projects illegally, end quote. So how does Trump wriggle out of this one? Well, very cleverly, in fact. And this goes to my point about dealing with Donald. He shifts the focus immediately. He interrupts Rubio and says, quote, no, I'm the only one on the stage that has hired people. You haven't hired anybody, end quote. So he does that. He gets some applause, and then he drives it home, interrupting again, by the way. Quote, by the way, I've hired tens of thousands of people over at my job. You've hired nobody, end quote. So that's the way he responds to these things. So Rubio comes off with, quote, yes, you've hired 1,000 from another country, end quote. So finally, somebody coming back at this guy. And Trump interrupts again, quote, you've had nothing but problems with your credit cards, etc. So don't tell me about that, end quote. Do you see what I mean? Dealing with the Donald. He's a snide, snarky little petulant fellow that just gets nasty and goes for the low blow. Rubio is posing a legitimate question that deserves an answer. Hey, Trumpophiles, here's a guy that breaks immigration laws, and you think he's the guy to hire to enforce them? He's the guy who is part of the problem, and you're going to trust him to fix it? Yeah, you know, right, only if it doesn't get too hot in Florida or too hot in the White House for him, huh? And then When Rubio bears down on him, doing a good job, by the way, maintaining his cool with this bully, smiling and coming at him. I loved it. As Rubio attempts to turn attention back to the point that Trump is the only candidate that on the stage there that broke the immigration laws and hired illegals. You know what I mean? Come on, don't parse this with me. I know the difference between immigration laws and hiring laws. Give me a break. I mean the laws about hiring illegals, okay? Anyway, when Rubio pushes harder, guess what bully Trump does? He does what all bullies do. He starts bullying the little guy. Yeah, here's 6'2" Trump towering over short. What is he, 5'9" or so? And here's what Trump says. You haven't hired one person, you liar. That's right. Big bad Trump calls babyface Rubio a liar. For what lie? Now, Rubio, to his credit, ignores the false accusation that he lied. Trump just called his debate opponent a liar. Can you believe this guy? What a low-class thing to do. No, use Trump's words. That was not a very nice thing to do, you know, to call someone a liar only because you don't like them telling the truth. Rubio presses him on this, and good for Rubio. Quote, he hired workers from Poland, and he had to pay $1 million or so in a judgment from, and he gets interrupted, saying, that's wrong, totally wrong. And Rubio just goes right on with it. That's a fact. People can look it up. I'm sure people are Googling it right now. Look it up. Trump Polish workers. You'll see $1 million for hiring illegal workers on one of his projects. He did it. That happened. And then over the applause, Trump says, I've hired tens of thousands of people over my lifetime. Tens of thousands. And Rubio would not yield the last word to Trump. And that's something else you've got to do with this guy dealing with Donald. You can't let up. You have to keep backing him up. You know, Rubio says, quote, yeah, many from other countries instead of hiring Americans. And Trump, clearly flustered now, says, quote, listen to this, be quiet, just be quiet. Can you believe this guy? And then as a parting shot, stealing the last word like he likes to do. But I've hired people. Nobody up here has hired anybody. And so the lesson here is, when dealing with the Donald, you'll have to compromise your manners at least a little bit. Dealing with this boorish man, he always takes the last word. You ever notice that? It's too bad Rubio did not go right on ahead and say, yeah, you lawbreaker, imagine this guy blowhard about immigration hiring illegals. Breaking the law. How are you going to be trusted to enforce immigration law when you are a lawbreaker yourself? And when Trump comes off with another last word theft effort, as he likes to do, and the moderator is forced to interrupt, well, then it's time to say, well, excuse me, now this is a debate, right? And I was the one being asked the question here. He doesn't get the last word here. Now do it smiling. And then just break it out so everybody can pay attention to this. You ever notice that? Oh, bully Trump. He called me a liar, you know, so he can get some of his own here, okay? With a smile. Big bad bully Trump steals the last word in virtually every exchange. Well, this was my question, and I'm taking the last word. That's right, Trump. You have hired a lot of people, and I have hired people too. Not nearly so many as you have, but I've never hired an illegal, and you have. You broke immigration law. I didn't. And I don't trust you to enforce immigration law when you break it yourself. Well, you know, that's what needs to happen. We'll get to some further insights into dealing with Trump in the next segment. You know, I've dealt with a lot of bullies in my lifetime. A few more rounds like the last debate, and I think the Trumpster is going to just lose his cool. He's already getting so close. And it's about time. I'll be right back.
You know, we've never had a better opportunity to get a genuine conservative in the White House. But which of these candidates should receive the Christians' vote? Come Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse, when Pastor Scheibach will show you how to use the light of God's Word to expose the heart of these candidates.
Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedaravia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org.
Pastor Scheibach is charging the gates of hell. Don't leave him hanging. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com to make a donation or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Churches have led our nation toward the ruin we face, and it's up to the churches to lead us back from destruction. God calls his people back to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church is inviting God's people to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information.
Enjoying your brain massage experience? Do you wish everyone could? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. The Brain Massage Show is ready to go. Get ready. Your brain is about to get a massage.
Hello, my dear friends. Welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Before we continue the deep tissue massage of your brain today, I want to relax with you for a little bit and have some fun. I received this from a friend of the Brain Massage Show. Thank you, John. I tried to run down the source, but he was unable to provide it, and I'm afraid I'll have to just ascribe it to the long list of works by a person named Anon. You know, Mr. Anonymous? It's all a worthy read, so enjoy. It begins, "Free people are not equal. Equal people are not free." That's a good one. "A gun is like a parachute. If you need one, and don't have one, you'll probably never need one again." The definition of the word conundrum is something that is puzzling or confusing, and here are six conundrums of socialism in the United States of America. First one, America is capitalist and greedy, yet half the population is subsidized. Half the population is subsidized, yet they think they are victims. They think they are victims, yet their representatives run the government. Their representatives run the government, yet the poor keep getting poorer. The poor keep getting poorer, yet they have things that people in other countries only dream about, and they have things that people in other countries only dream about, yet they want America to be more like those other countries. That was very good. He concludes it with three short sentences that tell you a lot about the direction of our current government and cultural environment. The first one, "We are advised not to judge all Muslims by the actions of a few lunatics, but we are encouraged to judge all gun owners by the actions of a few lunatics." And then number two, "It seems we constantly hear about how Social Security is going to run out of money, but we never hear about welfare or food stamps running out of money." Isn't that interesting? And he opines, "What's interesting in that is that the first group worked for their money, but the second didn't." And then last but not least, three, "Why are we cutting benefits for our veterans, no pay raises for our military, and cutting our army to a level lower than before World War II, but we are not stopping the payments for benefits to illegal aliens?" Well, Anon then asks, "Am I the only one missing something?" And of course we would respond, "No, we're with you there." He offers this quote from Plato, "If you do not take an interest in the affairs of your government, then you are doomed to live under the rule of fools," quote unquote. Now, I can't find a source for this, and I think, upon reflection, it is a weak saying, for it does not take into account the great number of fools who take a great deal of interest in politics. Okay, back to our subject at hand. I'm offering insights gained from the last debate into dealing with the Donald. I touched on Rubio's exchange with the Donald that showed Trump can be jabbed into a corner and delivered some meaningful blows to his glass jaw. I'd love to do some I told you so's on that one right now, but we really don't have time for that. Let's look at a Cruz-Trump exchange that was revealing. Following up on the issue of immigration, I thought Cruz did us a great service when he punctured the balloon of the myth that Trump single-handedly brought up the immigration issue as a political hot button in this election. Now, we are all grateful that he joined us in this concern, but he is a, shall we say, Trump come lately to this. We've been at this for a long time before Trump showed up, as Cruz and Rubio both pointed out, by the way. Cruz pointed out that he ran for senator in Texas promising to fight against amnesty and for the wall, while Trump was saying, "You're fired" on The Apprentice. He pointed out that Trump gave over $50,000 to three Democrats and two Republicans, all open border supporters, by the way. Then Cruz offered, quote, "When you're funding open border politicians, you shouldn't be surprised when they fight for open borders," end quote. And how does the Donald respond? Well, with personal insults, of course. He tells Cruz, quote, "You get along with nobody," end quote. You know, if you're dealing with the Donald on his level, you say, "Excuse me, how many marriages have you had? You want to make these snide and rude remarks about me? Let me ask you, how well do you get along with your wives?" Apparently there's a problem there. The people most important to you, by the way. How many wives have you had, Trump? Do you collect them, or do you find it difficult to get along with them? And when you don't get along with them, get rid of them. How are you getting along with Vera Koking, by the way? You get along so well with everybody, right? Sure you do. Calling them liars, for example, with Mr. Rubio here earlier. Calling women the names you call them. Oh yeah, you're a really nice guy that gets along with everybody, huh, Trump? But actually, Cruz did better than that, and I'm proud of him. He said effectively, yeah, Trump is right. He gets along with the Washington gang. Half of them are in his pockets. I added that. Cruz said, if he's elected, he will go and cut deals in Washington, quote unquote. But then he went to the heart of the matter. Cruz said, quote, anyone who really cared about immigration wouldn't be hiring illegal immigrants. Anyone who really cared about illegal immigration wouldn't be funding Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, wouldn't be funding the Gang of Eight. end quote. Then he landed a good one on the glass jaw. And Donald, if you want to be liked in Washington, that's not a good attribute for a president, end quote. And what does the Donald do? Again, you know, he steals the last word, attacks Cruz personally on something that has been totally vetted already. Personal sleaze attacks, and it's too bad Cruz, or one of these guys, won't just nail him on this trick of stealing the last word with a personal snide attack and get away with it. You know, on the issue of health care, Cruz brought out something I've been calling for. Trump is all big on repealing and replacing Obamacare, right? But he's never required to explain what he will replace it with, at least not to his supporters out there. I know that we are all telling everyone all the time what he has said about this in somewhat limited audiences, but his supporters in the main are not listening to us. But in these debates, his supporters are tuned in. So that's the time to get him to fess up to his supporters what he actually intends to do. So kudos to Cruz for setting the record straight on Trump's plan for health care. Not that Rubio's exchange with Trump was not itself very revealing on this point, and just great. However, it lacked the substance that Cruz brought to his attack on Trump. Cruz brought out the particulars. He explained that the difference between him and Trump on Obamacare is that Cruz wants to end it because it's overreach. It goes too far. Whereas Trump wants to end Obamacare because it doesn't go far enough. Excellent point and right on. Cruz brought out further that what was missing in the Rubio-Trump exchange on Obamacare was the fact that for decades now, Donald has advocated for socialized medicine. Trump is on record saying he wants government to pay for everyone's health care. Cruz correctly points out that socialized health care will destroy small business and inevitably leads to rationing. And then Trump starts off with, I do not want to socialize medicine. And then he goes on and on, blah, blah, blah. So Cruz interjects, and I loved it. On the edge of my seat, Cruz presses him, quote, Donald, true or false? You've said the government should pay for everyone's health care, end quote. Oh, yeah, tagged him. Trump says, that's false, Cruz. You've never said that? Trump says, no, I said it worked in a couple of countries, Cruz answers. But you never stood on this debate stage and said that it works great in Canada and Scotland and we should do it here? Trump denies he ever said that. Can you believe it? Yet you and I, we've heard him. We've heard him say those very words. Cruz presses him farther. Trump sweating, backing up to the ropes. Quote, did you say if you want people to die in the streets, if you don't support socialized health care, you have no heart, end quote. And Trump can't duck anymore. Weary from the jabs, admits it, but attempts to slip the punch. He says, quote, correct. I will not let people die on the streets if I'm president, end quote. Awesome move. Responds to this, quote, have you said you're a liberal on health care, end quote. Trump, excuse me, let me talk. If people, and I love this, these guys are learning how to deal with the Donald. Cruz interjects, talk away, explain your plan, please. And then Trump exposes yet again that he is a rank and file and rank liberal. He says, well, when I'm president, I'm not going to have people dying in the street. Then he says to Cruz, you may let it and you may be fine with it, end quote. If you don't see in Trump, in his soul, the liberal resorting to the dirty trick of ascribing meanness to Republicans instead of actually addressing honestly the problem, right there you saw in Trump's soul resides the last three decades of liberal tactics attacking conservatism with these ridiculous claims that what we want is for people to die in the streets. And you saw it thrown right under your face. You know what? And I'll bet the majority of Trump supporters missed it. I hope not, but that's just the way it seems to be going. Trying to say that a conservative approach to dealing with health care amounts to wanting people to die in the streets is outrageous, disingenuous, a flat-out big fat lie, a tactic that liberals have used against conservatives, well, pretty much dating back to Reagan. And Trump is one of them. He thinks like they think. He acts like they act. He's a schoolyard bully. But God bless Cruz. He was not diverted from his purpose to force Trump to expose himself to his supporters. Cruz ignored the insulting insinuation used by this boorish and crude street fighter politician. By the way, the guy reeks of hackneyed political gamesmanship. Cruz lands another upon the glass jaw, interrupting Trump's ducking and dodging the question, trying to slip the punch. He says, quote, so does the government pay for everyone's health care, end quote? And Trump ignoring the question. And Cruz coming again with, quote, yes or no, just answer the question, end quote. Man, I love this. And Trump is all, excuse me, we're going to take care of those people. Those people are going to be serviced by doctors and hospitals, and we're going to make great deals on it, but we're not going to let them die in the streets, end quote. You see what I mean? Dodging the question. Fact is, people are not dying in the streets now. Fact is, people can go into an emergency room and get treatment right now. Fact is, Donald does not want to answer the question while all his supporters are watching him. He answers this question when in conversations with reporters and limited smaller audiences that he knows are going to be good with it. But now, under the glare of the national spotlight, aware that his chumps are watching, he writhes, he wiggles, he slithers, agonizingly avoiding the question. So Cruz, and I've been really longing for this for a while, Cruz hits him again. Quote, who pays for it, end quote. So I've got to wrap up the show. But that's my take on the last debate. Finally, our guys have figured out how to deal with the Donald. You have to be aggressive with this aggressor. You have to stand up to this bully and with counterpunch after counterpunch aimed straight at his glass jaw. Anyway, allow me to conclude by offering insight into the phenomenon of Donald's rise in popularity. The problem with anger-driven movements, and that's what Trump's got. You know, while anger has its place, if it's not constrained by a proper sense of justice, judgment, and equity, anger distorts our reason and makes our judgments grotesque. Trump has tapped into a seething anger that has attracted a large following that find in him a vent for their frustrations. He has capitalized on this anger, and wittingly or unwittingly, he's using it to distort his followers' otherwise capable reasoning abilities. So they're willingly closing their eyes to his record, or lack thereof. And to his character, by the way. Trump provides to them a trumpet to blow in the face of those they blame for their pent-up anger. Trump is, for them, their middle finger salute to the establishment and politicians generally. When all the while, Trump's giving it to them, that these people who indiscriminately support Trump, who turn a blind eye to glaring and galling facts about his past associations and behavior, who accept offenses egregious to anyone's sense of justice, Vera Cokin, and propriety. Come on with the bald-faced lying, the gutter language already. Such people are the very definition of the word chump, or dupes. So I call them Trump's chumps and Donald's dupes. What are they angry about? Those who vent their anger through Trump, who are distracted from his character by the glitter of Trump's trumped-up persona, who are blinded in the fog of his media drama tactics. Is there a Trump follower profile? You know, let me back up and be sympathetic here a little bit, because I totally get the anger. I do. And I just want to talk to you a little bit and tell you, I understand what anger does. Anger is at the center of this tornado that Trump has lassoed. Many, probably most, of Trump's followers are very intelligent people. They're certainly smart enough to know that we conservatives have been betrayed. We've been stabbed in the back by those we have appointed to lead us over and over and over again, and we're tired of it. We're angry, and I get that. The typical Trump supporter might not be the degreed class. Many are of the blue-collar variety, but some are of the degree class, and many of his followers are very intelligent. So what explains this phenomenon? Truth is, Trump followers span a wide demographic, old, young, rich, poor, black, white, even left and right. He is correct in that. But the common denominator is anger, not principle, not even really in policy, just anger. And anger unregulated by a proper sense of justice and enlightened by reason is very dangerous. You know, the Bible warns us, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly, Proverbs 14:17. Now, you can see there how anger interferes with judgment. And then in Proverbs 22:24, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. Why? Well, 29:22 says, an angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. So you come Sunday night for this week's Issachar Report. I'll be showing the stratagems of evil and how rightly to respond or how to enjoy the protection of Jesus' prayer for us when he prayed, keep them from the evil. You'll love it. 6 o'clock this Sunday night. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. Again, that number is 1-888-770-8000. And leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. If you want to write to me, go to thebremasawshow.com. That's thebremasawshow.com. You'll find a place there to write to me an email. Hope to see you Sunday night, 6 p.m. for the Issachar Report. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
To make a donation, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com or mail your gift to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon.